Hey, this is Jeremy Winters from AccuDraft Paint Booths, and you're listening to The Builder Session.
Welcome to The Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie.
And on this episode, we have Jeremy Winters from AccuDraft Paint Booths.
We talk about his journey into collision and refinishing, the importance of PPE on the job, and keeping an open mind when entering the trades.
Please enjoy our interview with Jeremy.
Jeremy, welcome to the show.
What's going on, guys?
It's awesome to have you. We're really excited for this one.
Hey, thanks for bringing me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So just to get started here, for those of us, for those of our listeners who don't know like who you are, they're not familiar with the Booth Talk podcast or your YouTube channel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Name is Jeremy Winters. I am located down here in the wonderful southeast state of Georgia, where we are experiencing the wonderful pollen season, the pollening. It's happening right now, and allergies are running rampant.
The pollen.
Yeah. So I've been a painter in the automotive field for the last 18 and a half years, something like that. Last year, I wound up securing a job outside of the booth, but I never did leave the industry. I'm actually working for a paint booth company now called AccuDraft, doing content and marketing for them, and absolutely love it. So it's been awesome to see that there's another life outside of the booth. And being able to work from home, take care of my kids, and still provide a living. It's awesome.
Nice.
Anybody inspire you to get into this automotive finishing, or was it like at a younger age? Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a number of things, to be completely honest with you. When I was a kid, we had a family-owned business doing woodwork and toll painting.
Oh, cool!
If you don't know what toll painting is, it's like a old school style country style painting. TOLE, toll painting. Where my dad did woodwork, my brother took after my dad. He has a carbon copy of our father, and I take after my mom. My mom did a lot of brushwork and stuff like that, so I spent hours beside her. Learning how to do brushwork and scroll work and stuff like that. She was extremely talented doing that. And, you're 3, 4, 5 years old. 5 years old, all of a sudden, hey, we're starting to sell a little bit of this stuff. We're going to start growing. And we started traveling the Southeast, and I'm outside at 5 years old varnishing stuff, without a mask. Child labor laws, I'm sure we could get on that now.
But yeah. OSHA be all over that one.
Yeah. So I blame my mom for getting me into the industry. I was like, oh, it's your fault. I'm doing this now. Right. But no, it's a lot of that, that got me going into it. My dad loved cars, would always take us to car shows and stuff like that. My brother and I, we got into the sport truck scene, and, we were watching the Power Block and all this stuff, yeah. On Spike TV, back in the day. We watched Stacey David. We watched, ironically, another one of your guests, Kevin Tate's, showing how to do stuff. And I would see these paint jobs when we would go to these car shows. I'm like, I was attracted to the colors, the finishes of them. I'm like, that is so freaking neat. And I got a quote my junior year of high school for like $2,000 to get my truck painted. And now looking back on it, I was going to get hosed for a $2,000 paint job. It's like one step above. Well, I'm not going to name names of people that do that. I was going to get hosed. We'll just put it that way. But it was kind of one of those things of I can learn how to do this. And this was back before, YouTube was a thing. And, you dive head first. You go to work for a shop. You start sweeping floors, work your way up. And, eventually ask the right questions. And somebody takes a chance on you, starts teaching you stuff. So I worked my way through. And I've made some really awesome friends through the years doing this. And it's been a great industry.
That's awesome. I was going to ask you, when you're talking about the colors and you're seeing all these cars or whatever, was there a specific, technique or anything that initially caught your eye and you're like, I want to do that? Or was it just the skill level in general?
The thing I always wanted to learn, and this is how I realized I am not an artist, I love tribal flames. Drop shadowed tribal flames. It's something about flame jobs, tribals, when they're done right.
Yeah.
Now they're
not crab claws. Not crab claws.
Yeah. They've seen tribal flames, and then they've seen, oh yeah, wow. Okay. They tried to do them. And it's the same thing as they've seen flame jobs, and they've seen, sure enough, hot rod flames. There is a difference.
Yeah.
When they're done right, they're phenomenal. And then you try to draw them out. You're like, oh, God, you see these guys doing it. I could do this. And then you just realize that you develop Parkinson's when you're trying to lay out the tape. And it's like, this ain't happening. I cannot do this. And you leave it to the artists and let them do it. So I spent most of my time doing collision work in the body shops, just doing a little bit of restoration paint work. I never got into doing the custom, full-blown custom work.
Okay. So yeah, that was another question I had when you were spending time with your parents doing the sign work and brush work and stuff. I was wondering, did you dive into like the pinstriping, Mac brush, one-shot paint, all that kind of stuff?
I did, but at the time that I tried to get into it, too many years had passed. And the skills were gone. I couldn't figure out how to do it, you know. And that's another thing is that, again, you watch guys who do striping and they're just so smooth with it. They can just roll the edges and they're making the, man, that's all I can do. I've done brushwork before. I got this. And then you just, you booger it all up and you're trying your best. It takes a lot of time and a lot of practice to do it. So I all honesty, I wish I could have seen my mom attempt that. Whenever I was younger, because seeing her skill set with a brush and being able to pull lines and stuff that she used to do on all of our arts and crafts stuff, she was amazing. It was absolutely amazing to watch her work. And that was her getaway, it was painting. And still to this day, she's finally getting back into it. Now that she's retired, she's getting into doing that and more into the art of doing epoxy work and stuff like this. So it's neat seeing that creative aspect slowly start coming back out, but she doesn't do a whole heck of a lot of the brushwork and line work anymore.
Did you find when you were spraying like that, was it kind of like your zen area when you like just getting into the booth and kind of relaxing, get away from everything? Did you kind of find it
in all honesty, yes, because when you're working as a painter, you're by yourself a good chunk of the day. if you're blessed enough to work in a shop that has the preppers and has buffers and whatnot, then you can kind of hang out and just fill in wherever you need. You know, you're still going to be going matching colors or doing whatever you need to for the next job that's going to be coming up. And if you're efficient enough, you're checking out what's coming on down the line, trying to get colors matched up for those as well. There's never time to sit. So, but when you're in there in the booth, you fall into a rhythm, you know, you're in there spraying, you know, obviously the small jobs you can knock out quick, but the big jobs are dreaded, but they're so nice just because you can get in there, take your time, fall into a rhythm. Like you said, zen. It's just, I always wore headphones. It's like going to the gym. You put on a good playlist, just let it go. And then you just fall in and you just go to town. So it's nice. It was rewarding work. I absolutely loved it. I kind of had to get away from it because I started having issues being around all the chemicals at the time. So now I'll only dabble with it here and there. But I mean, it's rewarding work. It's a lot of fun just being able to see something from the beginning and then just seeing that end product. There's nothing that beats it. It's a huge thing of self-pride just being able to look at something and say, I did that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. I can relate to your experience. And this is actually... this is how Kevin suggested or, you know, brought you up to us. When we were talking with Kevin before the show, we were talking about my experience and Corey's experience. And I shared how I went to WyoTech and then I came back to Canada and I started working for a rod shop and we did a lot of hail jobs to pay the bills, you know, a lot of high build blocking. And I realized I was allergic to primer dust. I'd break out all over my arms and I'd get rashes and stuff. And then thankfully, not at the time, but thankfully I got laid off due to lack of work and I got into sales. Kind of similar maybe trajectory you took too. And I was selling I'd go around to the different body shops and it was a jobber, so it was all auto parts. Mm-hmm. But then we went to, I got a job where I was in the city that I'm at now and I was the PPG rep, I guess, for the area. So I'd go and scan the paint, of like a international truck that they didn't have a code for, or I'd sell all the sundries and all that kind of stuff to the shops, or not sell, I'd fill the orders because our salesperson did the selling, but I was like the tech support guy and stuff. But I just wanted to touch base on your experience there, because that's a going from like what you just mentioned, it's a big point of self-pride, like, hey, like I did this, and realizing that you could no longer do that and stay healthy. What was that process like for you? Was it like the mental process? Was there like a bit of, did you have to kind of mourn the loss of something? You know, what was that like for you?
Yeah, yes and no. It was more, at first I had a hard time with it. So I started having issues back probably about 10 years or so ago. I actually took a small break from the industry, and you know, I got out, you know, and eventually, you know, I came back. I missed it too much. But what it was I was having chest pain. So if you guys that are listening, if you put your fist right here on your sternum and you put another one right in the same spot on your back, and then just imagine it being a vice, it just starts squeezing in. That's what it felt like. And it would only happen whenever I got around clear coats, primers, stuff like that. Well, what we found out was happening was that I was having reactions to the isocyanates. The isocyanates, of course, are the catalyst, what helps make everything harden up. So eventually what I wound up having to do was move into a fresh air system, fresh air hood and all, breathing filtered, forced. It was positive pressure filtered air that I would use, and I never had a problem again. Obviously, that's probably what I should have been wearing to begin with. the positive pressure mask, they cost a lot, but you only get one set of lungs. And at the end of the day, you only get one set of lungs. You have to protect them. So yes, guys, I am one of those people. I am a huge pusher for PPE, protecting yourself, especially when you're coming to the chemicals. Those chemicals do bad things to your body. I wore a mask. I wore a charcoal mask. I was not always as religious as I should be. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you, but you know, it's like, oh, well, I'll hit this spot real quick. I'll hold my breath. I mean, we've all done stuff that we should. You know, let's be honest. So, but you know, it wound up catching up to me. So when that started happening, it was, I don't know what else to do. This is all I have legit ever done in my life. From 4 years old, I have been dealing with pain. I am now, you know, in my 30s or almost in my 30s at the time. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I kept pushing, kept dealing with it. It's fine. You know, if it starts to flare up again, we'll try to figure something out. You know, I'm married at the time. Well, still am. And we, about the time that we found out that we were pregnant with our first child, our daughter, is when everything started flaring up again. I started getting chest pains again. I was like, huh. All right. That's not cool. So It was at that point, you know, you have to make a decision. Do you make a pivot and try to go into a different field that you've never gone into with zero experience? Because that's the bad thing, is when you go try to change trades or change to a different part in the trades, is that if you don't have the training, you're going to go right back down to base level and you're not going to be making anything. And, you know, again, I've got bills. Yeah. They're sending those gimmicks in the mail called bills that I got to pay. So, I mean, I got to, you know, it is what it is. So my wife and I talked, and I wound up going to college. I enrolled, and thankfully I made enough as a painter. I was able to bankroll the entire thing, and I got in and out. So I don't have student debt like a lot of these people do. Kudos to you. If you want to go to college, that's awesome. If you want to go to trade school, I support you as well. 110%. Do what makes you happy. Do what's going to get you the job that you want. College was hard, man. I'm not a school person. It was extremely hard, but it gave me a chance to, okay, I've got my degree now. And I graduated right in the middle of COVID. Not the greatest time to be looking for a job. Not the greatest time for anything. So it's kind of one of those things of, well, I'm going to keep painting cars. This is what I know. It's paying the bills. I'm comfortable. There's no problems. And if something comes along, then I'll entertain it. But it was one of those things. I knew I was on borrowed time, long story short. But I knew there was going to have to be a change that had to be made. And I was able to graduate before my daughter went into kindergarten. So she's not going to have any memories of me being gone all the time at school. and all is good. So yeah, it sucks not being able to be in the booth painting all the time because it's what I love. But in the same sense, what I do now, I freaking love it. It's just as fulfilling as what I was doing before. It's just on a, you're using a different part of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can relate to your, going from trade to school and that cluster on your brain. When I got into university, going right from the trades into school, I signed up for all my classes, I had 5 courses at the university here, and probably the first 2 weeks I was like, I can't do this. And I had to drop, I think, 3 classes. I think I was in 2 classes my first semester because I just physically couldn't wrap my brain around 5 courses with essays and projects. And it was a struggle. Like, you go from trades where you're working with your hands and there's still got problem solving to do, but you kind of get into a routine and then you get thrown into something else where it might not be right up your alley and you're learning. And it's like, oh, this is just taxing on my mental wellness right now too. Cause you're like, I don't know how to do this or if I'm going to be able to make it through. And you kind of hesitant and self doubt. And it's a struggle.
Well, it makes you question everything, but I think that's where the challenge is, no matter what you're doing. Even if you're just starting out, you know, you're getting into the trades, you're getting into whatever job you want to be doing, you're going to go through those same exact things where, you know, say you're painting. I'll give you a great example. Whenever I first got the opportunity, when I started painting, it was the early 2000s. So, you know, this is right around the time of, the imports, Fast and Furious movies were big. So all of a sudden we're getting all these body kits coming in, all these fiberglass parts, this and that. Anybody who paints, y'all already understand where I'm going with this, but I would deal with them. And so all of a sudden these things would be doing great. And then all of a sudden they would just react and the paint would start frying up and I'm having to fix all this. And now, you know, you're supposed to have this done at a certain time so you can keep on moving the cars through the booth. And I'm spending all day long fixing bumpers that are just reacting with themselves. And I'm just, do I really want to do this? This ain't how the guys on TV do it. They get in, they paint it, they're done. Well, you also aren't understanding that there's multiple days of shooting. There's so many hours they get left on the cutting room floor. And you just see the glorified, you know, 5-minute clip versus all the stuff that went into it. So, and I think that's where shows like Overhaul and really skewed our industry of, oh, I can get a full custom and done in 7 days. Yeah. If you have a team of 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
So, you know, working day and night and everybody's, you know, donating for free. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But, it's interesting you say that because in my experience in the industry, there was definitely some education we had to do for the customer because all they saw was, what do you mean it's going to take 6 months? Overhauling does it in 7 days.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, they didn't.
Like, we also have other cars that are in the shop, not just yours.
And
everybody
we have
is
lights
focused
to keep on
those. Yeah. We've just like I said earlier, I had the gimmicks in the mail. This shop has even bigger gimmicks in the mail called bills.
Yeah,
so you know, their gas bills, you know, their electric, their rent, their all their stuff. You know, and it's just on a bigger scale. So we're sorry that we can't get yours that you're budgeting just this little bit. You know, we can't get it in that time. I mean, people have to be realistic about stuff, but I mean, that's neither here nor there. I mean, you're going to have those people in every which way that you go, but yeah, I mean, school was hard, man. And I, my hat's off to anybody who does it, anybody who takes any type of challenge to want to better themselves. If you're in your industry and there's classes that are offered for certifications within it, go after it. I was one of the nerdy guys who would constantly volunteer to sign up and go to these classes. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Getting painter certifications with different paint companies. You know, I've got a master certification through Exalta. Exalta is what everybody else would remember as DuPont.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think it was the Carlisle Group had bought them out and renamed it Exalta, like gosh, 10, 11 years ago, whatever it was now. But yeah, it's the same company. They kept a lot of the same products and whatnot. They've just been evolving since. But it's I love the industry, and that's why I couldn't walk away from it. So when I got the offer from AccuDraft, it was kind of I can take everything I've done for all this time, and you guys want to bring me in to apply that to what you guys do and help you guys do marketing? This is freaking awesome. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's been a family, man. You hear those stories of, oh, this company, they treat you like family. They're so good. They're so that. they legit have brought me when from day one when I came in, they have treated me like family from day one. Any question, anything, it's been awesome. So
that's cool. I was going to ask you too, your time, like about your time in the industry, just going back, the time when you were reacting to the solvents and stuff, was that before waterborne or after? I know waterborne isn't completely water-based, and it's a misnomer. It just meets a lower VOC standard. I know that because I used to sell, because we did the transition when I was the PPG guy.
This man here has done some time in the industry. I can tell.
Yeah, we did the transition from solvent-based to waterborne. So we were running VOC compliant Omni, and then the PPG from what was it? We had
EnviroBase.
We did before EnviroBase. It was Deltron.
You had Deltron, Global, EnviroBase, and AquaBase.
We had Deltron, and then we also did the VOC compliant Delfleet. For the fleet guys. But was there, when you were spraying the solvent based stuff? Did you have less of a reaction when it went waterborne, or like where was it during that transition?
The
clears aren't water based. I should say that.
Yeah, the clears still to this day are still a solvent base. But even the sealers up until just a couple years ago have still been solvent based as well. You know, you've had water based primers, you've had water based. Now you have a water based sealer. I don't know if PPG has them. I know Exalta Spies Hecker does the 5650. They released that just a couple years ago. It's weird that the water, it's labeled as, you know, everybody has this myth of, well, it's because it's water that is actually better for you. It's not as bad for you. You're still,
you can drink the reducer.
You can't.
No, you can't.
You know, we had this joke about one of the products. It was labeled, it started with the call letters of VE, and we just referred to it as very expensive water. The issues that I had with water were never anything reactions like I did with the solvent. With the solvent, much like how you said you would break out, whenever it was a summertime down here, of course, I'm down here in Georgia. It gets stupid hot down here. We've got 100 days of summer where it's, you know, literally 100 days over 100 degrees. And, you know, you're just pouring sweat. Well, at this time, I'm suiting up all day long. I'm wearing the full, you know, the full paint suit. I'm wearing gloves. You know, I'm doing as much as I can to protect myself. Well, you're sweating, so you're taking it off. Well, in the same sense, all of that sweating, you're still, those pores are just completely opened up. So anytime you walk into the booth not covered up, if there's any overspray, anything like that, I mean, I would just start developing, you know, just where it was exposed, you know, here on my arms. You know, I would just start having all these sweat rashes and bumps and stuff start showing up. And it's like, oh my gosh, or it's too hot. I'm just not going to wear, you know, I'll just tie my suit off here at my waist. I'll throw on the hood and I'll be okay. Well, in my t-shirt, it would literally stop right here at my sleeve level. And all of right here would just start breaking out, you know, where the open pores were, because it's, you know, just soaking in the solvents.
Absolutely.
The water, I never had that type of reaction to it, but it would actually just make me feel just bleh at the end of the day, as to where I just did not feel myself. Some guys, hey, hats off to them. They can go in there and they've been painting. I know one guy, he's been painting in a tank top and jeans for 30 years and has yet to have a reaction. Some guys' bodies can handle it. Some guys can't. Yeah. Mine, my timer just went up. My body was having as much as it could. I wasn't gonna give it a chance to develop into anything more. So I did what I had to get out and make a difference.
Get out of there. Yeah, exactly.
Did when waterborne products came in, did you ever find like quality? Speak from the millwork side, when we first introduced water based, it didn't hold up as well as solvent based. It for repair, it felt softer. It didn't cure as well. Did you find like? This isn't my realm, so I'm just curious.
No, you're right on par. I know where you're going. Yes and no. Some of them require you to put a hardener into them to help alleviate some of that softness that it'll have. If you have to go back into it while it's still in the base coat before it's been cleared, a lot of times you'll run into issues where, as with solvent, you could just get right back in with a little bit of water, some sandpaper, some 600-800 grit, something like that. Nib sand out what you needed to, dry it, put another coat of base on, you're fine. with water, you had to let it completely dry out. Now, once it's dehydrated, you can go ahead and put another coat of base on. You're fine. But when you're having to get aggressive with it and sand on it and whatnot, sometimes it's easier just to go to lunch and just come back and get back into it then. Because, I mean, anybody who's been in the paint booth, we've all had something fall into the paint. You know, we've got a stray hair somewhere. We're doing a white pearl, and we've got a big old black speck in the middle of a hood. It happens.
Yeah,
it's what it is. But sometimes when you would get back into it too soon, when it's dry enough to work with, but it's not dried out completely, mm-hmm. That sandpaper would snag, and all of a sudden it would roll back, and it would literally just start rolling back on itself. And now you've just created this whole other pickle that you got to fix. So there are issues that you would run into with if you're getting back into stuff whenever it's too soft. However, as far as the pros of it, far outweighed what cons were, because of the advancements in colors and color match and whatnot. The application of waterboard is so much easier to me than it is with water than it is with solvent board. Mm-hmm. So with solvents, you're going in, you're putting a, you know, everybody's seen somebody paint. You're putting a coat on, you let it flash. You go put another coat on, you let it flash. You're checking for coverage. Well, the hardest part about painting with a solid, or with a solvent rather, is just going in and just making sure that your metallics are orientated. Or the same thing with your pearl. You don't want that blotchiness. You don't want what's called modeling, is the technical term for it. And with waterborne, the neat thing is that you go in, depending on which manufacturer paint you're using, you know, you can go in and get your wet coat on there and then immediately come back in and do what's called that drop coat, just nice and easy orientation coat across everything and just let it flash. And everything lays out even. And it's like, okay, that's kind of cool. I can use this. That's awesome. So with that, you know, with water, you're also getting a lot faster and whatnot. So, I mean, the pros far outweigh the cons on it. So everybody, you're going to have your hardcore guys that want the solvent stuff, and I get it. There's certain things that I'll only use solvent for still to this day if I'm tinkering with it. But if I'm doing production work, water all day long.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's good that a transition, a big change in the industry actually yielded some good results.
Oh, yeah. And the OEs had started doing it, you know, probably 10 years or so ago.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, everybody, all the shops and all started getting on board, and then regulations started coming through with VOCs and whatnot, you know, and mandates. So it's nice to see people getting on board with it, because why wouldn't you choose to do something that's a lot easier for your painters in your shops, which is going to equate to more money going through the door, rather than have them fight with something that, you know, hey, this, a perfect example, Mazda 46G machine gray. You guys can look up this color if you want to out there. It is literally just a gray. That's all it is. It's nothing fancy about this color. What Mazda did is the car actually got released before us in the aftermarket were ready for it. And what it is, it's got such a fine metallic in it that nobody in the aftermarket had something ready that was that fine of a metallic. So we're getting them in the shops and we're going, we can't match this. What are you talking about? Well, the water shops were the ones that were some of the first ones to be able to actually start matching them, because those toners went out first and everybody's being able to get them and start tending everything and trying to get it to match. Okay, fine. The solvent guys were still sitting there going, I got nothing. What are you talking about? So it's stuff like that that comes out. You know, you're going to be, it's so much easier to match it with materials that come on the car as it is. Manufacturers are going to go with what sells faster. So if they've got more shops out there that are doing water, they're going to turn a little bit more attention towards that, because that is the future. Solvents eventually going to be pushed on out, just like how lacquer was back in the day.
Yeah.
So getting back to you left the booth, you went back to school. What did you go back to school for?
To go into debt. No,
you and me both.
How to blow money in 4 years. Got it.
Got my master's in that 4 years.
I did it in 8.
Even worse.
It took me 5.5 to get mine. I went back to school for marketing. I got a bachelor's in business administration.
Nice.
With a concentration in marketing. Originally I was just going to be a business major. I was like, well, that seems to be the easy one to go to. And then if you've ever been to a graduation and just look through who all gets a degree, all of a sudden the business stuff, just everybody and their mama goes after a business degree. You're like, oh my Lord.
That's what we did. Yeah.
Seriously? And I was talking with my buddy, Tony Larimer. He is one of the head he runs the marketing basically for Dan Am, who is the American importer for Sada spray equipment up there out of Spring Valley, Minnesota. And this man, he helped me tremendously through my college days, in the fact of whenever I started having issues or questions or anything, he was always there to help steer me in the right direction. So what I was telling him about, I was like, you know, I'm getting all the core classes are basically them. You know, how do I choose what I'm going to go into? This is what I'm seeing, blah, blah, blah. He goes, why don't you look into going into marketing? Well, I don't know. I don't know how to do marketing. He goes, Jeremy, that's what I do. Oh, so you're talking about products. Okay, well, I'm not a sales guy, so I can talk about stuff that I've used. And okay, this is cool. Yeah, I can go into that. And lo and behold, that's where it went.
So to shift gears a little bit here.
Okay.
To change it up a little bit. What would be your dream build? If you had to do, if money wasn't an object, if anything, and this could be in any trade, because this show covers every trade, right? We're talking woodworking, welding and fab, automotive, whatever it is. What would be your dream build? We've had a bunch of different ones from houses to different vehicles and whatever, but what would be your dream build? And get into detail a little bit.
I can go into detail now. The
with the paint color and everything?
I can nail it for you, brother. No, mine actually covers a couple different things. You know, I it's always going to be the next build, whatever it may be.
You're like the third person who said that. I think there's wisdom in that. I think that's a really good answer.
You put so much time and effort into building it in your head. And every car guy has their parts list and what they want to do with the car and how it's going to look and all the stuff that they're going to do. But the big thing that they're always missing is going to be the time, the money, or the facility to do it in. And that's where, for me, I have the time to do it. I have the facility to do it in. I've got a workshop out back here. I don't have the money, even doing the labor myself. Parts are not free. So, you know, for me, I'm a muscle car guy, but I'm also a truck guy. I have always, you know, I got started with the sport truck stuff. So I have always had a love before they were known as OBSs of the 88 to 98 Silverados and GMCs. And I had two or three of them, you know, back in my teens and early 20s. I built a couple of them, did the whole suspension, air suspension, drop them down, static drops, the color matched all interior. They're fun to do, but I've always wanted to do a two-door Tahoe. Weird love fascination for a two-door Tahoe or a two-door Yukon. It's got to be two-wheel drive. I love those things. But as far as my absolute number one dream build that I have wanted to build since I was a kid, it's got to be a 69 Mach 1. I love that body style Mustang. It's something about it, the curves, everything. It just sits right. I love it. I'm not a Chevy guy. I'm not a Ford guy. I'm not a Dodge guy. I'm a car guy.
Yeah.
And Chargers, they're awesome. Camaros, they're awesome. It's something. Everybody's got that one car that just, yeah, that's nice. You know, and that's what it is for me. So I love a 69 Mach 1. I've got the wheels picked out, the motor picked out. Realistically, what's probably going to be wind up being the next build or the dream build would be my 86 F-150 that's out back. It belonged to my father. It was the last new truck that he owned. And it's got a 351 Cleveland in it. The interior is absolutely mint. I painted it, gosh, probably 10 years ago now. It was my first water job. I did that with PPG EnviroBase. It's got 8152 clear on top of it. It's got three coats of that. It's fully sanded to buff. Looks way better than the 86 F-150 ever should be. But that 351 Cleveland is absolutely troublesome, and I am tired of it. I would love to get a late model engine transmission, just the whole drivetrain put up underneath it, just be able to go and drive that thing daily. That ultimately will probably wind up being the next big build.
Cool. Cool. That sounds interesting. It's probably different talking with people who've been involved, like with spraying all these different projects and cars. You see probably more projects than our listeners or even us, right? We kind of, you watch some shows, but when you're involved with it all the time.
I have painted everything from your typical Honda Civic to playground equipment to old metal milk jugs. I have painted carousel unicorns. I have painted, what's the weirdest thing that we ever did? It's probably going to be the unicorns that we painted in the shop. We also obviously we've done signs, we've done outdoor power equipment. We've done the power supply stuff. So like the over there beside, you know, at every intersection, we've got those big power boxes. I've painted those, jet cars. I've painted cars for TV. It's the weirder, the more it sticks out. And that's the fun part. But it's like you said, you know, you start just getting into it, you know, perfect thing here. One of my first mentors that I worked under, his name is Jeff McElhaney. Best guy ever. Legit would give you the shirt off his back to help you. He was just one of those guys. He loved the industry. He loved helping people come up. And if you showed a desire to want to learn, he took time with you. And that's some of the best stuff I ever learned, was just how to take your time working on something. And that was while I was working with him, the best partner I ever had, bar none. And I asked him whenever I first started working with him, I asked him the same thing. I was like, what's your favorite car you've ever painted? Because, you know, I'm full of piss and vinegar. I'm fresh in the industry. And I was just talking with him, like, what is it, man? You know, I'm naming off all these cars. And I don't know, man. They all run together. They're all the same.
Yeah.
And what are you talking about? And at the time, Jeff had been painted for 30, 35 years. And he's still painting to this day. And that's been 15 years ago, 16 years ago. And it's you get to a point where they literally legit always do. They just kind of blend together. You have your favorites here and there that stand out, you know, the oddball stuff. So that's a fun.
Did you ever find working on everyone else's stuff, everyone else's hot rod, took away from the drive to work on your own stuff?
No, not for me. Some people it does. I have heard that. I've got a couple buddies who they do. I enjoy it because you're helping somebody else build what they want. You know, it's again, goes back to the satisfaction of taking something from beginning to end. The most fun part about it is actually hearing everything that they want to do, or, you know, you're getting in with the plans and whatnot, and you get involved with all of that. And then you're actually seeing everything progress and whatnot. You stay motivated because you hear how happy they are, how excited they are with the updates and whatnot. That happened with prime example. I did a project. It was last summer. It was actually on Motor Trend. It was for Ian Johnson, the Defender that he did for four-wheeler. He was building an aftermarket Land Rover Defender, and they got a brand new aluminum body. Actually came out of Canada and Aqualu Industries, and they full aluminum body, this and that. They did turbo 2.8 diesel engine in it. He brought it down to me. Well, the guy that was actually, it was his car. I was being able to stay in contact with him through the entire thing. And you're hearing how excited he is as you give him updates, and you're telling, well, I got to do another round of primer. I'm going to be, you know, blocking the entire car this week. You know, I've got parts strewed all across the shop because, you know, you've got four doors, you've got, you know, two fenders, you've got a tailgate, you know, you've got all these stands everywhere because the body on this thing is freaking 28 feet long, it seems. So it's taken up a huge chunk in the back of the shop. And, hearing somebody be so excited and be in tune with what's going on, knowing that, hey, they don't do it, but they have an appreciation for what's going on. When you can deal with somebody who has an appreciation for the time and energy that it takes to do it right, it's absolutely phenomenal. What kills it for everybody, I think, is whenever they try to take on a side job, and it's always the guy that, well, I've got a guy who can do it cheaper, or this is my budget and it's completely unrealistic, or can you do it overhauling? Can you have this back to me in 7 days? Those are the jobs that people need to start rejecting and try to educate people why. And if they don't want to, you know, if they don't want to listen to them, then tell them to kick rocks and move on to the next one. people are too afraid sometimes just to say no. And I was one of those people. Mm-hmm. I absolutely was one of those people. I took on some of those jobs and I worked myself to death. And you don't have appreciation for what you do. And you don't want to do any more side work when you're done. And you just want to be able to work on your own stuff at the time. So when you can work with people who are truly appreciative and understand what's being done, makes everything so much better.
I think in every industry that can apply with when you have a good customer that is appreciative and understands the time, and it's not always about the dollar, right? That's unfortunately lots of times. And I get that too. We all, you know, everybody's different, has different financial situations and maybe different expectations. Like, oh, can I get a car painted for $8,000? Like, I think if you can get those good customers, it really makes the work more authentic, and you kind of dive in and you don't feel rushed to have to maybe miss steps or go quicker than you would like to.
Well, it's even with you, you know, you said, you know, just not even just with the car painting, but you yourself, you're a woodworker. So my dad was a woodworker. That was his hobby, but yet also his getaway. And it was so nice to see him dive into that. And he was a great woodworker. He's freaking awesome with it. And being able to see him deal with people who appreciated it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he would give them a price and it was what it was. Dad was that hard ass. He wasn't going to bend for anybody.
Yeah.
but nowadays, you know, whenever, like I just reached out to somebody the other day because I'm starting to see these what's called river tables, you know, these epoxy pours and stuff like that. It's really neat to me. And seeing, you know, my mom getting to work with epoxy and stuff, I'm like, I'm going to start looking into that stuff. I don't even know how much this stuff runs. Where do you, you know, so I found somebody that did it. And I asked them for, you know, this is what I'm looking to do. And they gave me a price. You know, at first, you know, I think everybody always gets sticker shocked first, especially if you're not from the industry. Mm-hmm. So I was like, ooh, okay. And he's explaining, you know, why and this and that. I was like, hey, I cut him off and I told him, I was like, it was the same thing I just told you. You know, my dad was a woodworker. You don't have to explain it to me. I know the labor that goes into it, especially with wood. You've got one shot.
Yeah.
It's not like you're dealing with metal where you can add more in.
Can't get your wood stretcher out.
Yeah, you there's no wood stretcher available. You ruin that, you know, $600 piece of oak. Well, I hate it for you. You're having to go get that other, you know, get another piece in. So, you know, and you get those live edge pieces. Those things are stupid expensive.
Yeah.
So it goes across every single industry, no matter what it is. You know, it's just I think people are starting to come around to understand, you know, the importance of the trades. And understand, you know, how it benefits how much the trades actually benefit us as a whole, you know, as a society. For so long, college was just pushed down everybody's throats, and well, you're not going to make a good living unless you go to college. And in high school, I mentioned, you know, I specifically remember this. It was a literature teacher. We were talking about careers and what we wanted to do. And I mentioned I wanted to get into the body shops. I mentioned about sport trucks, and I'm sitting there telling her, you know, some of the stuff that I've told you guys about paint work and this and that. I want to do painting. I'm going to do into this and blah, blah, blah. And she literally turned her nose up at me. Why would you want to get into doing that? Have you seen what they're paying for these things? That is amazing. The quality, I'm sitting there looking at it from the art aspect of it. These things are amazing. Some of the things that are coming out, blah, blah, blah. But she just frowned upon it. And like I said, a teacher that I completely respected, and then just have her turn her nose up at me. It was like, well, that kind of sucks. I wasn't expecting that. But it's kind of flipped now. You know, trades are becoming more in demand, more power to them.
Yep. Yeah.
So speaking of kind of the obviously the trades here, and with the automotive finishing, for somebody looking to get into this area, what's some advice you have for, whether it's younger generation or up and comers or somebody that wants to say, you know what, I want to give this a shot. What's some good advice you have for our listeners?
First thing I would do is I would go to one of your local mom and pop shops. I wouldn't start out going to a chain body shop. Some of those bigger ones that have, you know, multi locations and whatnot, start out at a mom and pop shop. Those guys are going to have more time to take to show you hands-on training and actually, you know, get you started from sweeping the floor, but you'll have a faster pace of getting into working hands-on, whether you're starting, you know, prepping cars or whether you're starting just helping tear down cars, you know, whichever side you want to go into, it's great to learn a little bit of all of it. But the mom and pop shops are going to be the best ones that you can get into to have more one-on-one time learning. Now, if you can get into some of the trade, if you've got a trade school nearby, you know, I know Biotech was mentioned earlier. I almost went to Biotech. I was looking at the Blairsville, Pennsylvania campus that they had. And then I forget which what the one was in Wyoming that they had.
Laramie.
Laramie. There you go.
That's where I went.
But okay. I was looking at the Blairsville campus, and I just, for some reason, I turned it down. We had a trip ready. We were going to go up there and check it all out. I frowned upon it. I just stayed local. If you can go to a trade school that has programs to specifically designed going into what you want to go into, I highly recommend it. That's one thing that I love about trade school versus, or like a tech school, trade school, whatever you want to call it, versus college. Because college is going to give you two and a half years of the same classes that everybody and their mama there is going to take. I'm telling you from experience, I just went through this. And then you're going to have, you know, whatever selected that you want to go towards, whatever your major is, and then you'll be able to take classes that go into that. But you're also going to have to take other classes around in that area as well. As to where with a tech school, a trade school, something like that, you're going to be able to dive straight into the classes that you want to have for whatever it is. If you're going into computers, you can get straight into Microsoft stuff. You know, going through doing that, you can go straight into your IT stuff. Now, you're going to have to take some core classes here and there also, but it's not going to be as involved with that because you want to learn this. That's what you're paying to go to school for, and that's what they're going to teach you. So mom and pop shops, trade schools, absolutely. And then get into some of the bigger shops, work your way up there and get all of your certifications. Because a lot of those bigger shops, they'll help pay for your certifications, whether it be ICAR, ASC, paint certifications, stuff like that. They'll help you out.
What about some technical skill sets that are important to develop getting into auto body or finishing?
If you're going to get into auto body, the biggest thing that you need to understand, and it's I'm not even going to say it's not even a technical one, but it's learn to listen. That's the biggest thing I could tell you, because some of the guys who have been doing it for so many years, they have so much knowledge. And sometimes you get somebody that just wants to run their mouth, just hush, just listen, open your ears. The best thing just for technical is just learning how to decipher colors if you're a painter. Learning how to see, as weird as it sounds, seeing a red shade, seeing it green, seeing it blue, seeing it which way, that sounds simple enough. But you guys that are out there in the industry that hear this, you'll understand it's not as simple as what it sounds like. So, you know, learning to decipher the colors as you see it in the color, because all these colors mixed together makes some really weird ones. So it's that's the biggest one, is learn to decipher your colors and pay attention. Some of the guys who you'll be working with out in the field have got plenty of years. Learn to listen. And then learning how to block. That's another thing that I cannot stress enough, is learn how to block the panel. A dual action sander, a DA, is not a block. Let me repeat that. A dual action sander.
What if the pad's hard? What if the pad's hard?
Oh God. I have seen it. I've seen people just go straight over bodywork with DA. Guys, I'm not one of those painters. I understand. I feel your pain. I get it. I hear you yelling at the radio right now. I'm not one of those. You got to block them. You've got to block them. Guide code is your friend. Now, just learning the proper way to operate a block. It's not just sticking it on a panel and going back and forth, you know, cross-hatching everything, working everything down level. It takes time. And it's a process that you develop a feel for. And the bigger the car, the more you're going to get it. And trust me, your back is going to hurt. But by the more time you take with it to learn the process and do it right, the better the result's going to be every single time.
Yeah. So, you know, keeping with that tools idea, you mentioned block, you mentioned a DA. What are the top three, if someone wants to start out in this industry, top three tools that they should invest in?
Okay, so if you're going to be a painter, there are three that you need to get. We've already named two, but we'll just take the block out because the block is going to be a given.
Yeah,
you know, we'll just say hopefully the shops have the blocks that you're going to need if you're starting out. So you need to invest in a good quality dual action sander. There are some out there that you can get for cheap, but understand when it comes to auto body, the price matters. You can spend a little bit, or you can spend, you know, a good chunk one time, and that thing's going to last you 10, 15 years. Me personally, I don't know if y'all name brands or anything, but I love Dynabrand. I love their air tubes. Absolutely awesome. They run smooth. They last years. I've never had an issue out of them. Buy it once, buy it right. Another one is, you don't have to go through and spend the money. If you're going to be a painter, you don't have to spend the money on a brand new paint gun just to say that you have a paint gun. I'm sure the painter that you're working with has extras that, you know, he's kind of retired over the years. See if you can buy one of his old ones from him. You can buy it for $100, $200 from him. The first gun I ever bought was a Sada 2000 that had dried up paint that he just never got. He never went back through and cleaned it out. So I spent $100 on it. Now I learned how to paint. Did it leak? Yes. Did it spit paint? Yes. Did I buy a rebuild kit about 6 months later for it? Absolutely. But it was still cheaper than going through and having to buy a brand new gun for your first one. You don't want to ruin an $800 gun, you know, when you're just learning.
Yeah.
You'd much rather be out $100 and say, well, I'm not out that much, versus dropping that brand new shiny $800 one on the floor and go, eh.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge difference. Another thing, you know, we're given blocks. We're going to say a dual action. We're going to say you don't have to buy a brand new paint gun. Buy one secondhand. Just make sure that that operates. Guys, the other thing that I cannot stress enough is a respirator. Continue to get a new respirator or get new cartridges for your respirator. Those things are only good for 40 hours once they're open. If it's a charcoal one, make sure after 40 hours you're replacing it. If you're just leaving it out in the open, guess what? It's done in 2 days. You need a new one. They come with a resealable bag. You take the cartridges off. Pay attention to how they're supposed to be used. You only get one set of lungs. Take care of them. PPE, PPE, PPE.
PPE. Got it. Absolutely. So, Jeremy, this has been an awesome conversation. And I just want to, first of all, thank you for coming on the show and taking the time out of your schedule to join us, to share your wisdom, to share your experience. As we kind of wrap up here, I want you to share with our listeners where they can find you on social media, any projects you have going on, and anything you'd like to promote. Feel free. Go ahead.
Sure thing. You can check out some of the videos that I've done on YouTube. They're still up. I have not taken them down. It's at Booth Talk over on YouTube. You can check me out on Instagram. I don't post there a whole heck of a lot anymore, but it's That Jeremy Fella. It's a play on a screen name that I had when I first got on there called That Painter Fella. So I am That Jeremy Fella over on Instagram. Jeremy Winters on Facebook. Here lately, you can find me helping out Kevin Tate, you know, with some of the projects that he's got going on. I just finished up Project Rocket Miata for season 3, Hands on Cars. It's actually sitting out in my shop right now. It is a supercharged LS motor in a first gen Miata because, quote, everybody needs a 600 horsepower roller skate. I think it's amazing. You can check him out over at Hands on Cars with Kevin Tate's. Also, I do want to plug, check out AccuDraft Paint Booths. You can go to the website, AccuDraftPaintBooths.com, and it's the same thing across social media, AccuDraft Paint Booths. If you shoot us a message, you're more than likely going to be talking to me. And check out the YouTube channel as well, AccuDraft Paint Booths. You'll see a bunch of the videos that I'm in when I had much longer hair. I just cut it all off to donate. So it's you can see me with hair about down to my belt at the time.
Nice. Well, I mean, what do you say? This is awesome. It's so informative. You have a lot of experience to offer, and AccuDraft has gained a really awesome resource in you. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Jeremy. We really appreciate it.
Oh, brother, anytime. Y'all ever want me back and anything at all, just give me a holler, and I'll be more than happy to come back and chat with you guys. It's been fun.
Awesome, and thank you to everyone for listening. All of Jeremy's information will be in the show notes, as well as everything else we have going on. Just check out the show notes. Thanks again to Jeremy, and thank you, Hoff.
Thanks, Rosie.
All right. Catch you guys on the next one.